All right, folks, how about a round of applause? Let's get this thing going. Woo! Welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the CDOT Show, opening day eve extravaganza, live from Motor Pub in Over the Rhine. Big shout out to Motor Pub for hosting the live CDOT shows each and every month. If you have not been down to this awesome bar, come check it out. We're right on Main Street, 1345 on Main Street in Over the Rhine. A lot of cool stuff going on down here. We are happy to be here again. We did not have a live show last month as Trent was in Arizona for spring training, and he actually just landed this afternoon from Montreal. How was Montreal? Let's get into that first.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it's probably they need a team again. We need another team.
Do they want another team up there?
There was 96,000 people for two games there this weekend.
But is that because there were two games?
There were two games last year, too. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like,
there's 45,000 one day, 50,000 the next.
You really, but do you honestly believe they would sustain a team again if they got another shot at it?
When they had the right ownership and everything, yeah, I think so. I think they could do it. I mean, shit, we got Tampa, we got Florida, or the Miami. Give us Montreal, and that's at least a better trip. It's the best trip in the National League.
So it's more for you, really, than
it's
baseball.
It's 100% about me.
Right.
It's a cool town.
It's my favorite city in North America.
It's a very cool town.
Because you've done the
Montreal Comedy Festival,
which is like the biggest comedy festival in North America.
And it was an amazing time, for sure.
Did you do it in French or?
No. Okay. The comedy? No.
How much does anything kind of go over their head? Like, is there words
you know what
that
it does?
It up?
Really does. I had a couple jokes that I did two sets that week. And I had to change some stuff from the first set to the second set just because certain stereotypes that we have in America don't transcend up there, which is weird. I'd never even crossed my mind, that maybe Jehovah's Witnesses in Canada aren't a thing or they're not,
Yeah, they just make fun of the Americans.
Yeah.
It's great because you'd see people look at me and they'd know automatically. They're just like, oh, I'm going to speak English to this guy.
Yeah, it's... You know what I was most surprised about is that I did not like poutine. I know I look like someone who would love gravy
exactly.
on French
Thank
fries.
You. I had poutine at least three times.
I like how that's when that girl started paying attention. Right? She's just like, what? That giant man on stage does not like gravy on French fries? That
and,
is true.
And cheese curds.
I'm not a fan. I did not care for it. I'm sorry if that upsets anyone. I didn't think that would be such a hot topic here. John Fay is with us this week. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I was not in Montreal, but I'm good.
On
but you've
on
been,
the subject
right?
of poutine.
I've been, yeah, I've been many times.
And have you had poutine?
I think once, but I'm not a big gravy guy, so.
Wow. Wow.
Cheese curds, thank you. I had the poutine with bacon and chicken as well. It was fantastic. Smoked meat poutine.
You smoked what?
I had last night.
You did what?
Yeah.
What'd you say?
Smoked meat.
Oh, I think you said I smoked weed. I was like, well, that'll make anything taste better, apparently. So you really believe that Montreal, you think they'll get another team as much as you want one? Do you think they'll get another shot? Do you think Tampa or somebody's going to head up there?
Tampa's lease is too bad. Yeah, I mean, they're through 2027, I believe. I think there's a chance. I think it's more expansion more than relocation.
I was going to say, they'll create a team versus someone moving there?
Yeah, I don't know how you would do it. I mean, you'd have 16 teams in both leagues, but then you'd have four. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work.
I would be surprised if a team ever goes back. Because I remember covering games in there, and no one really pays attention to the game, and they weren't into baseball like they are here. So.
We're being heckled on a podcast. I'm pretty sure that's never happened before. Let's reset the table. This is the CDOT Show presented by Inquirer Sports. I invite you to follow at ENQ Sports on Twitter for all of the all of your Cincinnati sports needs, as well as all of us up here at the table. He is at C Trent, he is at John Fay Man, and I am at Josh Sneed. Follow us on Twitter. I had a great tweet about the Kentucky game last night. It's the best response I've ever had to a tweet. Almost 1,000 retweets. That's never happened for me before.
What was the tweet?
I had a tweet and I said, congratulations, Kentucky, on a successful season and raising another banner into your historic rafters. And it was a photo of a participation ribbon from Field Day. I upset a lot of people. I don't know how I can play Lexington again, but
true story,
a lot of people liked it. Yeah.
True story. I'm at dinner last night watching sports on TV, playing, drinking. It is until I got back to my hotel at like 1:32 before I knew Kentucky lost. That's why I love Canada.
Wow.
Because it was just hockey. I could tell you how the Senators did and the Flames, but it was great. I was completely.
You lost me at hockey. Are you a hockey guy? You like hockey?
No.
Yeah, no. I don't get it either.
I don't dislike it, don't like it, don't.
Yeah. So tomorrow is opening day here in Cincinnati, a holiday in every sense of the word. And, John, how long have you been covering the Reds?
This is my 19th year.
19th year. And where are you from originally?
I'm from here.
Oh, you are from here. So did you grow up a Reds fan?
Yeah.
Now, does that make it sweeter or harder on you than it does Trent, who is not from here, did not grow up a Reds fan, to... Do you have an emotional involvement that ever comes into play with your work? No.
Once you start covering a team, you can't be a fan of them per se. You have to look at it. I call myself an unbiased observer. You know, you can't do it. I don't think anybody can do it successfully. So, you know.
Trent, what's it like for you? I mean, I'm sure it's just a lot easier not having a vested interest. If you spend so much time with these players and around the team, do you start to kind of become like a secondary fan or not really?
No, you root for yourself. Like, I root for Montreal to get a team so I can go to Montreal.
Are you still drunk from last night? Montreal getting a baseball
team? I'm wearing my Montreal Expos hat. I'm all about it. I'm like that kid who comes back from, like, you know, it's like a bad stereotype or whatever. But you root for yourself. You root for stories, storylines, things that are easy, interesting. I like when there is, interest in what is going on. And it's always kind of nice that people are reading you. So it's when they win, you have more people reading you.
So controversy, you kind of root for controversy in a weird sense or not really?
I don't know about controversy. It's just as much as something interesting, an interesting story.
So what's interesting right now, other than the fact that it's a new season, we all reset at zero. Is there any what's a big storyline going into this season for this team?
I think, you know, Trent was in Montreal, and they finally revealed the lineup. I thought that was kind of a big deal, or I suppose that he isn't committed to absolutely have it. But that was kind of a thing all spring, that Brian Price, for some reason, would not tell us what the lineup was going to be. So that bit of news makes it interesting. I think things like the argument about Joey Votto, RBI versus on-base percentage, and things like that, those are interesting topics, and they're not controversial, maybe, but at least people are on different sides of it, so it makes for a good back and forth.
Do you feel like this team did some addition by subtraction, or just having certain people back healthy makes this a team that is that much different from last year, or did you really think that they needed to add some pieces to contend this year?
We added a former MVP in Joey Votto.
Right.
I mean, that's a pretty big piece.
I think we have a big upgrade in left field.
You say addition by subtraction. I think you're talking about Matt Latos and Alfredo Simon, who they got rid of. I don't think they did that to just get rid of those guys. They needed to free up some payroll. That allowed them to bring in Marlon Byrd. You know, Matt Latos, that was a big story when he kind of ripped everybody. But Matt Latos was good.
He
was hurt last year, and I think he's going to be a hard guy to replace. He's a guy that – if you look at his record, he was, 14-3 or 14-4 every year. He had an ERA under 3.5. He's a good pitcher. They're replacing him with a young guy, and that may or may not work out. But I think that they had to make that move in order to bring in Marlon Byrd because they needed some help offensively. They weren't going to be able to keep him. So I thought it was a move they had to make. But he's going to be a hard guy to replace.
As casual insiders, the Joe fans were surprised about Sam LaCure being sent down to AAA, was that as big a surprise to you guys as like more sort of in the know? Did you see that one coming or no?
I didn't. Sam didn't pitch particularly well this spring. His velocity was down. And when you're a guy like Sam LaCure who, and it also his control was off. He had a really bad spring and didn't look good. So I thought maybe it was one of those where he has a short leash, but not being on the team was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, we heard rumblings about his velocity being as low as 82, 84. But I still thought he'd make the team because he's been a pretty effective guy. He wasn't great the second half last year, but he's had some really good runs, and he's always been a guy who's not afraid, who would come in with guys on base and throw strikes.
Or pitch several innings if you need him.
I was surprised. I thought you give him the benefit of the doubt. But the thing about Sam LaCure is I think he makes $1.85 million. All 29 teams could have picked him up, and they didn't. So, obviously, all the scouts had seen him, and they weren't impressed with his stuff. So, you know, I think that was one of the most difficult decisions Brian Price has ever made as a manager, just because of where he comes from. He had been the pitching coach. LaCure is a good team guy, a guy who gives it his all and everything. So I thought that was a very difficult thing for Brian to sign off on it and advocate that they don't put him on the team.
I think it might have opened some eyes in that clubhouse.
Sent a message to some of the other players.
Certainly,
kind of
because Sam is respected.
Yeah.
And they know he's respected by the organization as well.
Yeah.
And he wasn't performing.
Yeah.
And so I think it might have had one of those kind of
Which a lot of people think probably that's what this team needs at sometimes.
Well, they need to score runs.
Yeah.
The other stuff can be a lot of talk and, you know, that can fill up an hour on talk radio, but I don't know that it really matters.
Trent and I talked about a lot that one of the things that you could kind of fault Brian Price with was he stuck with some of his relievers too long last year when they struggled, particularly J.J. Hoover. I think he was in too many leverage situations after he started to struggle. And I think that's the natural inclination of a guy who was a pitching coach who was close to these guys that he gives them the benefit of the doubt. But I think he admitted it, that he stayed with these guys a little too long. So I think by making the move with LaCure, it does send a bit of a message. And it's a performance-based business.
And that was one of the things last year is you had guys who weren't performing, especially in that bullpen, and they were pitching well, and they didn't get sent down. And they didn't until too late. Jumbo Diaz didn't come up until much later. And this was a guy who was great in spring and was great in Louisville, and they had him while that bullpen was falling apart, yet he didn't get that call. So I think maybe there is maybe a little message sent about that bullpen, because the bullpen needs to be a lot better, and I don't know that they fixed it.
The one thing I'll say about the bullpen, I think I wrote about, is I think Tony Cingrani, once they moved in the bullpen, he really impressed me. It's spring training. You got to discount the stats, but I think he struck out half the guys he faced, and he pitched at the end of the games, and you would see him, and it was like, man, he's just overwhelming these people.
I think what's interesting with him is he could be, and I don't know that Brian will do this, but he could be a different kind of pitcher than anybody else has. You can use him two innings at a time because of that. That not many people do with high leverage relievers now. And you might even could go one time through the lineup with him. And it's kind of a nice – it would be an interesting way to use Cingrani, because when you saw him as a starter, he was not very efficient with his pitching. He'd be 100 pitches in five innings, and then that taxed the bullpen. And what's would be interesting is he could then be the guy who's helping the bullpen and save innings, which is something that he did the exact opposite as a starter.
Now, Chapman came out of the game. I think, John, you tweeted that there was some – was it you that tweeted there may have been a misunderstanding that he was not hurt? Is there an update? There's nothing wrong with him per se?
I don't know what the Spanish word for hamstring is, but there was definitely some confusion. The odd thing was Brian Pena was catching. Joey Votto, who speaks Spanish, was in the game, and Christopher Negron, who speaks Spanish, was in the game, and somehow that they nobody got it right, and Chapman was mad. He wasn't. I think he felt something. He called Pena out, and then Pena called everyone out, and what he told him later, I didn't call you out to take me out of the game. I mean, but if a guy, if they have any shadow of a doubt where you mention hamstring and a pitcher, you got to take him out. It wasn't a big deal. It was just, as Brian Price said, it was a misunderstanding of some sort.
Well, that's good.
Well,
news.
And then he pitched in Montreal. So, I mean, if he hadn't pitched there, maybe you'd go, okay, maybe there was something fishy to the story. But he pitched there, so I don't think there's really anything to that. But it was interesting, and it was one of those things that kind of caught your eye, because they've had a couple of those. When Mesoraco came up lame in where were we the other day? Anyway, he had an injury the other day, but then he was fine. It was just a cramp instead of a strain. So,
so were there any other people that that didn't make the roster or that did that were kind of a surprise to you? Not necessarily in a bad way or a good way, but just anybody you see that's going to be on a short leash in AAA to possibly come up in a.
I think all things being equal, Michael Lorenzen would have made the team, but he's not on the roster. Rossell Iglesias is, and it's a short. He may only make one or two starts for Homer Bailey, but Lorenzen was better than Iglesias in spring training, so I think that was kind of a procedural move. I thought he was going to make it.
Amazing because 2 years ago, this guy's an outfielder in college. He's an All-American center fielder in college 2 years ago.
Lorenzen.
And the fact is, I mean, he is that impressive pitching and great athlete, quick learner, incredible stuff.
Yeah, I think if anybody in the rotation falters, DiScafani or Marquis, you could see him here pretty quick. He's kind of like Chris Bryant in Chicago, where if they keep him down for 2 weeks, it delays his free agency one more year. That probably has something to do with it, but he was impressive in spring. He was much better than Iglesias, particularly late in spring.
The two hot names of recent have always been Stevenson and Winker. How have those guys progressed in spring, maybe from the last time that you saw them? Do you see them possibly coming up anytime this year?
Stevenson was a guy who was kind of held back a little bit with it was shoulder soreness, right, John?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, yeah. So we didn't even see – he didn't pitch in a big league game, and he did last year. So – for him, it was almost a step back, and this is just spring.
Right.
He didn't have a great season in Pensacola last year. He'll probably restart there. And so, it's a big year for him because last year he's still one of the top prospects in baseball. But it's one of those things where you can have a year in Double-A like that, and it can be a learning year. But if you have a second year in Double-A like that, then it's a concern.
Yeah, he's still very young for Double-A. He was probably one of the youngest guys in that league. Winker's an impressive kid. He's got a great personality. He's very outgoing. He's kind of reminds me a little bit of Jay Bruce when Jay Bruce first came up. He's a hitter. He can hit, but he's not as athletic as, say, Bruce. I think he's going to be a left fielder. He doesn't run particularly well, but he can hit. Sean Casey might be the comparison with him.
But more athletic than
not
Sean.
Terrible comparison.
Yeah.
He puts the ball on the bat, and that's something that this team really needs is guys who don't have that swing and miss, who make contact. And I think that's something they're trying to get more of in the system.
Yeah, he hits the ball the opposite way a lot. I don't think he'll hit a ton of home runs. Really, a lot like Casey, where he's not going to hit a ton of home runs, but he's going to hit some doubles, drive the ball, and I think he'll hit for a pretty good average.
And he'll benefit from playing in this park, too.
Yeah.
And maybe another park. I've had this debate with a friend of mine, and he sees him as 20 max, and I go, well, I think I can see him over 20 just because of Great American, home run type guy. He's a guy that I can see maybe at the end of the year, but again – he's not on the 40 man, so they're not in any rush. And he only has like, I don't even remember how many it is, like 50 at bats at Double A. Yeah. So he still needs a lot more time. I mean, some seasoning and to actually do it at Double A.
I think in the case of both of those guys, it's kind of up to them. If they go to Pensacola and play really well, they'll get bumped up to Louisville, and then they are a call away from making it. But it's not a guarantee with either one. Winker hurt his wrist in an auto accident, so he didn't get many at-bats at Double A. And as Trent said, Stevenson's numbers weren't that great, but I think he was in that league at 21, which is really young for Double A.
So a lot of people are saying that the NL Central is the toughest division in baseball. Do you guys agree with that this year?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I like the AL West, and the AL Central is going to be interesting. But I still go top to bottom. I don't think anybody touches the Central.
It seems like a lot of people added a lot of pieces in the division, namely the Cubs, but even the Cardinals picking up Jason Hayward. And
right, but they also lost Oscar Tavares.
Yes.
And Shelby Miller. But, yeah, I mean, the Cardinals, until proven otherwise, they're the class of the division, and they're the team to beat.
Yeah, I think a big thing with them is if Waka's healthy. I think if he has more shoulder problems, the rotation isn't as strong. I think, and we've talked about this on other podcasts, but I think the Pirates are going to miss Russell Martin. It's a hard guy to replace. I think the Cubs are still a year away. They have great young talent, but when it's all coming to the big leagues at the same time, I think that can be difficult. So, and I think the Reds can contend in the division. I don't think a lot of people agree with me, but
I agree with you, John.
You had them at like 85.
Yeah, today, I think if things go right, they can win 85 or more.
Oh, yeah.
I think the thing that the national people are discounting is they just don't realize how little they got from Joey Votto and Jay Bruce last year. Those guys were both healthy all spring. And if they're back in the lineup becomes so much better that I think they can score enough runs if they get good pitching. The back end of the bullpen becomes the back end of the rotation becomes a question without Latos and Simon. But they have better depth than AAA as far as starting pitching. So, you know, again, things have to go right, but I think they can challenge.
Here's my optimist hat. My optimist hat says there are a lot of ifs, but they're not huge ifs. The ifs are if Joey Votto is healthy, if Jay Bruce is Jay Bruce, if Todd Frazier is who he was last year, if Devin Masuraco is who he was last year, Brandon Phillips is what he, you know, stays healthy. And
moving him down to seventh is big.
If Billy Hamilton is more like the guy he was the first half than the second half. I mean, none of those are giant leaps. I mean, none of those you just say, now hold off here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, all of those are okay. It's a lot of them when you put them together, but there's not a whole – nothing out there is out of the realm of possibility. And so that's my optimist hat on that. Well, and then the team that doesn't exist anymore hat says it's still a lot of ifs. You're playing with the back end of the rotation. Is Homer Bailey going to come back in time? Is the bullpen fixed? Can Joey Votto play? And is this a degenerative thing in his knee? That's the other side of that. And easy to see. I mean, I see the scenario where, yeah, they do surprise people. And I also see the scenario where, after the All-Star game leaves town, Brian Price leaves town, Johnny Cueto leaves town, and Aroldis Chapman leaves town, and Marlon Byrd.
You guys are just looking at me like,
I'm sorry.
It's a buzzkill after the beginning of that answer.
I think.
Hey, are you ready to get the season started?
Yeah, I think you can go either way with them. You can make an argument that they're not going to be very good, and you can make an argument that they are. I just don't think people realize what a loss Joey Votto was last year. When you take him out of the lineup for 100 games and you're playing guys like Brian Peña instead of him, Brian Peña is a nice backup catcher, but he's not a third hitter guy who had 1,000 OPS a couple years ago. So I think that was just a huge thing. And then Bruce, tried to come back from the knee too soon, and he had 18 home runs. That's the thing with Bruce. The 217 doesn't shock me as much as I thought that guy could hit 18 home runs in his sleep. And, you know, he just did not have that power. He showed it a little bit in spring training. So I think those guys are healthy right now. They got to hold up the whole year, though.
Do you think Homer Bailey is only a couple starts away from coming back? Because, see, that's what has been frustrating for me. Is like you hear, oh, Latos just he fell off the mound. He's only going to be out a couple weeks, and then he's out 2 months. And then you hear
that
about Joey Votto's.
But that was the thing with Latos is it was the knee, and he was coming back from the knee, and then he had an arm issue. So yeah, it's two different injuries.
Okay, well then Joey Votto is an example of someone that's like, oh, he's taking ground balls, he's hitting, he's running full speed, and then I realized they got to a point last year where why risk bringing him back on a. You know, a dead season. But, I mean, do you guys really believe that whatever injuries they have right now are just a couple weeks away?
It's the human body. You don't know.
Yeah, I think with Joey Votto, I was talking to someone earlier, that you know, they held him out of those first four spring training games, and people were alarmed. But the whole time he was being held out of spring training games, he was doing all the drills. He had a normal spring.
Yeah.
If you
couldn't tell the difference.
He was hurt, had been hurt, you would not have seen it. I think with Homer Bailey, whether he's back or not, he's got to avoid having setbacks. That's what happened with Latos. When you're coming off of elbow surgery and you have a setback, then you're automatically another 2 weeks or whatever. So far, so good.
Also remember, you know, that's the same surgery that Jonathan Broxton had. Jonathan Broxton, granted, pitches an inning at a time, but he came back and had no issues. So it was the exact same surgery. And I was told his wasn't as bad as Broxton's.
And, you know, I saw him pitching these they pitched him in minor league games so they can put him on the DL retroactively. So, you know, they're a little bit optimistic that he's going to be back. He looked fine. I mean, he was throwing up to 92, 93. Got hit around in one of them. But if he's out there healthy getting his pitches in, I think you can reasonably expect him to miss maybe two starts.
One bright moment that we can look forward to this year, no matter how the Reds are doing, is the All-Star game being here. A lot of people are going to be going, and they've never been. You guys have been. What can you tell people that they absolutely need to do, or what can they expect, or, you know, just kind of set the table for how awesome that's going to be?
I think you don't realize how much it overtakes the entire city. And, like, I've seen it in much bigger cities than this one. When it overtakes a city. And the way – holy shit. The Padres got Craig Kimbrel and – wow. Sorry, my pop-up. Craig Kimbrel to the Padres. Really? They just keep going to the
Lord.
Braves for Melvin Upton Jr. and Kimbrel to the Padres. For Carlos Quinton, Cameron Maben, two prospects and a draft pick. Holy crap. Sorry.
That's okay. It's awesome to everyone in here, but by the time
it's gonna be
anyone listens
to
this.
Yeah, on the recording. But that's interesting. What was the – oh, the All-Star game. Yeah, the All-Star game's great. You know, you have – they're going to do the Fan Fest, although I'll tell you what. I was in Minneapolis last year. I think the people in Cincinnati are probably spoiled by Reds Fest. I don't think you guys understand, like, what an amazing event that is that – they're the Reds Fest, the Fan Fest, the All-Star Fan Fest, to me seemed like a not as good version as Reds Fest, but it was a bigger space than the space they have here. I think they're going to do some really cool things here. They've talked about, like, opening it up to the outside, the Duke Energy Center, in some tented spots. You know, and it's everything around the game. You know, I like the prospect stuff, so that Futures game is so much fun. I mean, you'll probably see – The thing I'm looking forward to the most of all the All-Star Game stuff is a guy named Joey Gallo, who's a Rangers prospect. I'm waiting to see him take batting practice at Great American Ballpark because, you know, one of the things I'm going to be interested to see if the Home Run Derby, you know, Dunn once hit it into the river. I want to see if somebody can do that, and it would be interesting. So the guys who maybe have the best chance are in the minor leagues, and so if you can go to the batting practice for the future game, I really kind of recommend that. I watched that last year with Chris Bryant of the Cubs and Joey Gallo, and they were just putting on this amazing show. And I like the Futures game. You get to see a lot of these kids that you hear about. I'm sure you'll see Winker. So it's and then you'll see guys like Gallo and probably not Chris Bryant, but maybe Addison Russell, some of these guys. So that's a lot of fun. It's just the whole week. I think they had a big concert last year with some band that apparently draws a lot of people that I had never heard of because I'm old.
Probably have a beard like yours. That's how all the bands are nowadays. No. Everybody's got a beard.
I think they were foreign.
Right. Yeah, you know, it was last year in 1989. It's a much, much bigger deal. It's
In 89, they were begging people to take it.
Yeah, it's with all it encompasses, it's a pretty big deal. 88, yeah. So, it, you know, and that was a bad game. That was a 2-1 game. So hopefully they'll have a bit of a better game and the home run contest won't get rained out and all that. But it's become a really big deal.
Very cool. Well, we're going to take a break here for just a minute, let everybody get a refill, use the facilities, and then we're going to open it up to some questions from those who showed up tonight. This is the CDOT Show. We are live at Motor Pub in Over the Rhine. We'll be right back.
Awesome. Thank you.
I will. Give me a 10.
I meant to bring one of the they gave me two separate passes from the Montreal trip, and I was going to give one of those away for fun, but I forgot to bring it. It's in my bag.
Face them up a little bit. There you go.
Is Cameron back? All right, cool. So hit record.
Woo! Yeah, buddy. Welcome back. Welcome back to the CDOT Show, presented by Inquirer Sports, sponsored by Cincy Shirts. Cincy Shirts, we have a retail store on Main Street, 1435 Main. Right now we've got a buy two, get one free sale. Come on down to Cincy Shirts. We're giving away Johnny Bench posters if you purchase a Johnny Bench shirt. A lot of cool stuff up there. Or you can just buy online. Enter code CDOT when you check out. It'll save you 20%. We always appreciate you coming down there. I'm joined, as per usual, by the namesake for this show, Trent Rosecrans. Terrific.
He's on Twitter. He's busy now.
All he cares about is this Braves trade.
I find this fascinating.
Follow him on Twitter, at CTrent.
I'm much more engaging on Twitter than in person,
much
obviously.
Much more engaging. And much more timely. And also our guest, John Feyman. Well, John Fay. He is at Feyman on John
Feyman. I'm often introduced on radio shows as John Feyman.
The Twitter handle throws you off a little bit.
Yeah.
People don't think I have a last name either.
You're just C-Trent. And I am at Josh Sneed on Twitter, so follow me.
So people call you Josh Sneed?
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. I got in the game early. I didn't have to. There wasn't. I'm pretty sure there still aren't any other Josh Sneeds out there that would have stolen the name. But okay, terrific. So we are at.
There we go.
We are at Motor Pub and Over the Rhine. We do this monthly, where we record the show in front of a live audience. And then Trent started something new in spring training, where he is doing a more weekly-ish version of the show. When he has access to the players and stuff like that. So if you're a subscriber of the CDOT Show, you already know that. But if you're listening for the first time, you will be treated to a more frequent podcast where it's kind of one-on-one with Trent. And then we'll do this show here at Motor
Yeah,
once
I had Eric
month.
Davis the other day.
Eric Davis, you had Jesse Winker in
Jesse
spring
Winker,
training. Brian
Pena. Did a couple of different little things, and hopefully have some other cool stuff in the works.
Yeah, so so we appreciate everybody that listens and everybody that shows up when we do these live shows. We will be doing one in May. Be sure to follow Trent or at ENQ Sports to know when that's going to be, and we hope you'll join us for that one. This is the portion of the show that requires a audience because we like to open up the floor for questions for anyone up here. So anybody that wants to hop on up to the microphone and ask a question, the guy in the Bengals jacket is immediately leaving
the
house.
I thought he was
going to the exit.
I thought he was going to be bad enough already.
That is hilarious. He's like, this is my cue.
I have to feed the meter. I've heard that in Cincinnati that they're really tough. With
they are.
That is a new thing.
The meters are way too expensive. They got to lower the meter rate. Work on that.
Okay, we've certainly suddenly changed this into an OTR chamber meeting. Who's got a question? Somebody come up here and ask a question, or just give us your opinion on what you think that the is going to happen. Guys, is Cozart going to bat over 220?
Checking the magic eight ball. I don't know. The thing is, if everybody else hits, you're okay with him as your eight hitter and a great defensive shortstop.
Of course you would.
I can't wait to make $16 million, too, but that's just not going to happen.
I think the one difference with Zach Cozart this year is they have – I'm not going to try to pronounce his first name, but Suarez.
Eugenio.
At AAA, and I think –
is that the guy they got from Detroit?
Yeah, and he's – he's an impressive guy. I mean, he's younger. He's been good offensively in the minor leagues. He looks good defensively. I think if Zach really struggles like he did last year, you could see Suarez here. So I think that's the reason they went out to get the guy. I think they love Zach for his defense, but you know he just didn't hit last year. So I think you can live with it to a certain extent, but. You know, that's why they made that move, I think.
Ask me about RBI.
Our first question.
Speaking of Suarez, did you get to see the other two guys that came over in the trades? Wallach and I forget the
Crawford, pitchers. Jonathan Crawford.
Yeah, how'd they look?
Wallach was pretty impressive. I mean, this guy hits. I don't know how much of a defensive catcher he's going to be. He's played he played first base yesterday. It was one of the cool parts yesterday. He's the son of Tim Wallach, a longtime Montreal Expo. And they introduced him to the crowd as the son of Tim Wallach, Chad Wallach. And he got a huge standing ovation. It was really cool. But, I mean, the kid can hit. He can play a little first base. He can catch. And then Crawford, that's a live arm. He's young, but he's a first rounder. The interesting thing with both Crawford and DeSclafani, two of the guys they got in that trade, they were teammates at Florida in college at the University of Florida, and their catcher was Mike Zunino, who's with the Mariners. Mike Zunino's dad is a Red Scout, and he had scouted both these guys since high school, and he knew these guys really well. And so these were two that they had kind of targeted that they wanted because Greg Zunino was very familiar with them, and he also got the input from Mike, who liked both the pitchers. So, but Crawford, real good power arm, still a lot of development to go. But you know, you can't ever have too many power arms in the minors.
Yes.
Hi.
Is
Joe Maddon gonna make a big difference with the Cubs?
Yes. I mean, the bigger difference.
Don't let him be like that to you.
I'm sorry. I was blinded by your bright yellow dress. It's Easter. It was very festive. I hope you filled your Easter basket with eggs. I'm sure it was a great hunt.
We're gonna get so many females out to these shows when you talk like that.
If we don't already. No, that explains a lot of my life, that was actually an attempt at a compliment. It's 39 years. I'm just going, yeah, I've really screwed up a lot. Anywho, no, I think more than anything is they've got a lot of talent, a lot of young talent. It's not exactly something that comes quickly, but Madden's been in that position before, and he's proven to be pretty good with young talent. And he's, you know, for my money, he's the best manager in the game, so he's going to help. Well, maybe Bochy, but anywho.
Yeah, I think he'll make a difference.
I think he'll make a difference, but I don't think it's this year.
Yeah, I don't think any manager makes as great a difference as people think. It's the players, and they have the players. I don't think they have the players to win it this year. I think, you know, a year or two down the road, they're going to be a force. But as I said before, I think they have all those guys come to the big leagues at the same time. They don't have a lot of position player leadership, so I would be surprised if they're in contention at the end of the year.
Man, they're coming. The Cubs are coming. They've got a lot. Addison Russell, that trade still blows my mind, the Jeff Smarja for Addison Russell. But
so I was checking out John Fay's article about the possible end of an era if the Reds don't make the – so what do they need to do? I mean, what's the bare minimum to avoid the blow-up of the team? And who survives the blow-up of the team? I mean, what's a post-nuclear Reds look like?
That's a great question.
I think if they stay in contention this year, you'll see Cueto for the rest of the year. If they're in it at the All-Star break or at the trade deadline, they'll keep him because Bob Castellini's, one, always optimistic, and he really wants to win. I think long-term, I just don't see how they can sign Cueto. I don't know that it's the right move. I think he's the second-best pitcher in the National League right now, but he can reasonably expect to make $155 to $160 million. I don't know that this franchise can afford that going forward with some of the contracts they already have. I think there's a chance they could sign Mike Leake. He's going to be much more reasonable. But they started preparing for this a little bit when they got rid of Latos and Simon. They brought in some younger guys. The depth is better, but you never know if there's a Johnny Cueto among that bunch. I mean, for 35 years, they've been trying to get a Johnny Cueto, and now they have him. And it's just the economics of the game make it very difficult for them to keep
him. Who else would you see going besides Cueto? I mean, he's the obvious one.
Chapman's
Bird, because he's on a 1 year.
Well, Bird's on 2 years.
Two years.
Yeah. But they're also he's making $8 million both years, except the Phillies are paying half of it this year, and then the Reds are on the hook for the full one next year. And if they're –
it's a vesting option for next year.
It's a vesting option, but it's a pretty much a –
550
plate appearance. Yeah. I mean
– wow.
It's one of those things where it's probably going to vest. Actually, I think there was something in it, wasn't there? Anything. It was weird. But, I mean, it's one of those things where it'll probably vest. And he'll he could be valuable to somebody. But, you know, Chapman to me is kind of the big piece. If they're out of it and they're trading – because – Cueto is a one-year rental or for the rest of the season, whereas Chapman has another year. And there will be somebody, if they're out of it, that says, you know, the difference is a closer. And while you look at long-term, a starter has a lot of impact. But over a half season, you know, or July, that's 10 starts. And so if that. Trying to do my math, but a closer can have a bigger impact, and also once you get to October, I think that will be very interesting, plus the extra year you can spend. I mean, again, like I was just talking about the Cubs got Addison Russell for Jeff Smarja, and that was because Smarja had another year. I don't think they can get Addison Russell from the Cubs, but there might be that level, somebody might be willing to pay that kind of price, and that's
but
you've got to look at that possibility if you're the Reds.
So what's a Cueto or a Chapman? What does that bring in? Obviously a lot of prospects because you're not going to get any names
from a team
that's in contention.
Yeah, because you want cheap money. Because they have a lot of money tied up already in Homer Bailey, Jay Bruce, Brandon Phillips, and who's Joey? Oh, that guy, Joey Votto.
Yeah, I think I looked the other day when they traded David Price. I think they've got Smiley, is that his name? They got a good pitching prospect and another prospect. I think that's what you're looking at. you're going to be if they're going to trade him, it's going to be pretty late. You're getting him for half a season. I think, as Trent said, I think Chapman's the more interesting guy because you control him longer. And if you're struggling at the end of the back end of your bullpen and you're in contention and all of a sudden you think you can get Chapman, it's a pretty huge deal. And I think the other thing is if it was Miami that was in contention, I think Miami would just love to have Chapman because the huge Cuban community down there, I think he's just a natural for down there, and he lives down there. So, but who knows what's going to happen.
Another question? I thought for sure that guy.
Oh, man. That was really. It's downstairs. It's awesome.
Yes, sir.
I'm back. I have a question, and I have an idea, and I want you guys to shoot it down for me. I have an idea on how to save the Reds. And the saving the Reds involves signing Cueto. Hear me out. And then you can kill me.
Let's remind everyone that this is the man in the Bengals jacket.
Yeah.
So he needs saving.
he's got a Reds t-shirt on, though.
He needs saving.
Nice disclaimer. Yeah. Okay. We all know that you have to have at least one top-of-the-rotation guy to win the World Series, and Cueto's the guy they have. So you can't let him get away. We all know that you have to have a great superstar, and the Reds have that in Votto, assuming his knee's okay and he's not on the decline. What if the Reds try to exploit the market in a different way, and they get rid of all the other players that they've have these big contracts to, and they go and try to build an Uber bullpen, and they try to find starters on the cheap who can get them to 5 or 6 innings and turn the game over to the bullpen, and invest in players that they evaluate and that they can take what I would call small risk on. Because what the Reds can't afford to do is take big risks. When they signed Bailey, they took a big risk. They gave him all this money, and they don't know what they'll have. Even if they'd wanted to have kept Latos, it's a big risk. You don't know if his elbow's going to blow up, the shoulder's going to go like a la Sean Marshall. So why not take the small risk in the bullpen and sign guys for 1 or 2 years? And sign a lot of them and say, okay, we know some guys aren't going to work out, but we'll have these mini contracts. Some will work, some will won't. But we will use those guys, and we won't have to spend all this money on starting pitching. Because it seems to me that the Reds are playing a game they can't win. They could never afford to sign Latos, and they couldn't really afford to sign Bailey, even though they did. And the honest truth of the matter is, as much as we like Mike Leake, and he's a game guy, he's really, when I look at his numbers, he's not worth what he's going to get. And can the Reds afford to offer him even a contract?
The problem,
what do you think?
In theory, that sounds great, but as you mentioned, Homer Bailey, they're going to live with his contract. They're not going to be able to move him, not now at least, when he's coming off of elbow surgery. Brandon Phillips, they're not going to be able to move him. So other than Votto, those are the two big contracts. And Cueto, as I said, I think he's the second-best pitcher in the National League, but it's a huge risk anytime you give a pitcher a 5 or 6 year contract, which is what he's going to get. So I think about
Verlander. We were having this discussion about Verlander a couple years ago. Is he worth that money now? I mean, I think you go back on that deal, and that's this guy who was as good as anybody. I don't give that kind of money to a pitcher, a long-term pitcher. What I do is do what actually they did when they got rid of Latos and Simon. They got those guys and they're stockpiling arms. If you look at what they're doing in their system, they have a stockpile of arms. And those guys, they're wanting to be starters, but they can all be fallback relievers because that's what a reliever is. It's a guy who can't start. So it'll be – I think they're trying to do that some already. But, again, like John said, you just – saying get rid of these contracts is tough. And then if the bullpens are so fungible, like you never seem to know these bullpen guys from year to year, how volatile good relief pitching is. And so if somebody is really good and you're taking these chances, you can't give out a bunch of, you know, 1 and 2 year deals because you only have 40 roster spots. And so it just, you know, that 40-man roster, you're constantly juggling, and you have to really keep an eye on that.
I think you're better served if you're going to do what you said, make your bullpen really strong, using guys like Tony Cingrani, who you drafted, is really cheap but has a great arm. And I thought Michael Lorenzen, I thought put him in the bullpen. You know, I think you can help it that way with guys who are making $500,000 a year. Zach Duke got a $15 million contract. So even relievers who you think are relatively cheap aren't cheap anymore. The guy had two good years. I mean, he I was just reading today, 2 years ago, he had an out in his contract and no one would sign the guy. So he went back to AAA with the Reds, and then he ended up having a couple good years, and he got a $15 million contract. The free agent, the Reds have no chance in the free agency market. No. They have to develop, draft and develop, sign and develop guys like Johnny Cueto. You have them for 6 years. If you can get guys on the cheap or develop your own guys, you control them for 6 years, and they're reasonably inexpensive. So
and then if you they're good enough, you look at – I mean, the Royals just did this with what's his name? Their star.
Santana.
I'm blanking. No. Ventura.
Ventura.
You sign those guys early like you did with Cueto. That Cueto contract where you give them money early and give them that security, that can help, but you're also gambling there, especially with pitchers because they can always have an arm injury. And so they had a fantastic deal with Cueto, and they got him beyond his free agent year. Those are the kind of gambles you've got to make, and you're going to lose some. And they've lost some gambles already.
All right, so sorry to hog the mic. How big of a deal is it that the Reds don't get the real opening day anymore?
Hey, and I mean, do they still sell out and they still have a parade
here,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, it's tradition, though, right? I mean, does it matter?
That ship sailed a long time ago. I mean, once they added the night game, Marge didn't want the night game. Since then, they haven't. And I still think if they offered the night game to them, which they're going to do because of TV, they're going to have the night game. The Reds wouldn't want it. I think they want the Monday deal where they can have the parade and everything.
It's a Sunday.
I think they just
don't want to do the Sunday thing and screw over the parade. I mean,
no.
But I mean, I think people here just don't realize what a big deal it is to open at home every year.
Yes. That is huge.
As we talk to other writers all the time, and they'll say, where are you guys opening? And we say, well, open at home every year. And it's just that – no other team gets that. That's a pretty big deal.
And that's a good trade-off, honestly. And really, I mean, opening day, it's – I love opening day, but it's freaking amateur hour. It's like it's like New Year's Eve. And St. Patrick's Day. It's the day that everybody goes out and you got to go, oh, yay, live it up and all this. But you know, if I'm hardcore drinking, I'm doing it on a Tuesday. And that's when I want to get serious. And that's, you know, give me a businessman special on a Thursday over, you know.
John, what's your
trying
best?
Trying to get a bad ticket.
You're from here, so you were a fan before you got into this as a business. What's your best opening day memory from when you were just a fan?
I think I only went maybe once or twice. I remember one time I went, it snowed, but the memory of me for opening day that will always surpass everything, I was in the riverfront dining room, which was down from the press box that overlooked the field, and watching John McSherry. You know, I noticed something was wrong, and then to
96.
Watch a man,
yep.
it was an incredibly... It's just something you'll never forget when you see something like that happen.
Yeah.
Now who's the downer?
I've got good memories. I mean, I remember the first time that I skipped school to go to opening day. I had no idea that when people left their plastic souvenir cups. Like, that blew my mind that they wouldn't take that home. And at the end of the game, me and my friend probably collected 150 plastic. I brought them home. My mom was like, what is this? I was like, these are our new dishes.
Did you wash them out at least?
Oh, yeah, we washed them out. Okay. It took about 6 days. But and then my other favorite memory was the first year that we had a T-shirt company. We decided we were going to go down to Fountain Square to hand out some T-shirts and some postcards that had a coupon on them. Well, the T-shirts went immediately, and then no one wanted a postcard. So we were standing there with, like, literally 1,000 postcards in our hand. And I was like, how can we get rid of these? And I said, you know what, let's get in the parade. So I told him, I told my partner, I said, I'm going to act like I'm crossing the street, but instead of jumping into the crowd, I'm just going to make a turn and stay in the street. And when I do that, you start walking on this side of the street. So that's what I did. I pretended like I was just crossing. And then right before I got to the crowd, I just started walking forward. And immediately we were in the parade, and I couldn't hand out cards fast enough. There were just hands sticking out. And two blocks, I got rid of 1,000 postcards.
That's entrepreneurial spirit.
That's right.
You're a business genius.
That's right.
Question, what does the normalization of relations with Cuba mean for American baseball?
It's a fantastic question. And, you know, I talked to – when the announcement happened from President Obama, I talked to a lot of people. And the thing is, there's so many questions of what normalization will look like. We don't know. But there could be an influx of talent and – my God, I was just thinking, you know, we were having this discussion the other day. You think Montreal's a great trip? Havana. That's where I want a team. But, yeah, I think that's the great unknown. Although a lot of their top-end talent is gone or aged. So, but you will see a younger developing nation like, you know, it could be another source like the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, I think eventually that's what you'll see. You'll see teams have camps there, like the Reds. I think they share one with four other teams. They'll have camps and just develop their players there.
For those of you listening, my name is Pat. I work for The Inquirer, and I'm handling social media for the CDOT show tonight.
God bless
you. We have a Twitter question. Yes, yes. At Joel Kaser wants to talk about when the Reds lost opening day. Maybe you guys could go into the politics of that, and maybe the timeline. The question is, when did the Reds stop having the first official game of the season?
Was it 95 or not? Yeah, it was.
94 was the last time they had the first pitch, but it was a couple of years before that. Do you need me to come to the microphone?
Yes.
But basically, it's the same as someone asked before. When they went with the Sunday night game, Marge Schott was the owner at the time, and she wanted nothing to do with it. They played it the 1 year, but then they had all the ceremony on Monday. So I think even now, as I said before, if they offered it to them, they would not open on Sunday night. They would much rather have all the parade and everything. And I don't think it's detracted from it one bit, man. I think people still love it, the parade and all the ceremonies. The same, because someone else is playing a couple hours before the night before. I don't think it changed.
And look at it this way. Tomorrow, and of course, this isn't as good on recorded thing, but tomorrow at the start of the day, either the Cardinals or the Cubs are going to be in last place. See, that's the optimist hat.
Have they completely decided against doing the overseas start of the season?
Oh, they still do. They did one last year.
Yeah.
They did do it last year. I didn't.
Yeah, it'll happen but occasionally every couple of years.
Teams really don't like it.
Yeah.
Can't go wire-to-wire. It's true. The Reds can't go wire-to-wire. Of course, the last time they went to wire-to-wire, they opened on the road. In 90, right?
Yep.
So there you go. Just saying.
All right, we'll take one or two more questions.
Yeah. What do we got?
Hi. So I personally think that talent aside, team clubhouse dynamics are very important to the success of the season. And Matt Latos's comments aside, not going to validate that, but with the new mix of guys that's come in, I don't know if you've seen or can comment at all if there's been any change in the clubhouse.
You know, what's funny is, like, I just kind of noticed, like, Marlon Byrd fit right in.
Yeah, he's a pretty vocal guy. He's outgoing, I will say that.
And what was interesting was the Latos thing kind of showed a lot of stuff, because when he said it, I was sitting there. It was the next day, and I was talking to Zach Cozart, and Zach's just like, you know, it's not really my place to say anything. I'm like, cool. And then we're just kind of talking about it, not with a recorder going. And Marlon Byrd looks over at me and goes, "You want a quote on that?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Well, that guy should shut his damn mouth. Reds did him a favor. He's going to a good team in a pitcher's park and a contract here. He needs to mind his own damn business. We're fine over here." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Here's the new guy.
I'm Trent."
"Hi, I'm Trent." Yeah, no. But it was kind of interesting. And then the other thing, you know, I think these are all degrees, and clubhouse chemistry is nice, and it's helpful, and it can make good things go better. It can make bad things go worse. Winning cures all. But I think one of the small moves that might happen, and they talked a lot about this, not only do you have Marlon Byrd, but you may have Skip Schumacher in the clubhouse instead of in the training room. And that could help a lot, because Skip's got a little red ass in him, and that's something that's been needed.
Yeah, I thought one of the reaction to the Latos stuff was really interesting, because everyone we asked pretty much ripped him. And guys usually don't want to do that. They'll say, hey, you know, but it was very strong, the reaction there. And the other thing I'd say about Byrd is he plays hard. I mean, spring training, you don't see guys busting it down the line every time they hit a ball, and he did. I was, for a veteran guy to do that, I was pretty impressed. And I think that, you know, when they went into the reasons they got him, I think he kind of lived up to that, where he's vocal, and as Trent says, someone who's willing to speak out, that shows a lot.
And also, he is a guy who has the credentials. He has the service time. He's been in the game long enough that there's nobody in that clubhouse who can pull rank on him. No. And he can say no and shut some things down. And that's
what Scott Rowland did, and that did a lot for the Reds.
Yeah. And Scott Rowland also played well.
Yeah, that's the other side.
So, well, cool.
All right.
I think we're good.
We got one more? All right, this will be our last question.
Two questions.
Oh.
He's got a Cincinnati Royal shirt on.
With the impending trade or whatever of Cueto, what is your impression of Robert Stevenson? Are we going to have to wait 35 years for a legit number one?
Possibly. I mean, that's the thing. Is like.
I know you can't predict it, but your overall impression of the kid.
I really like Lorenzen. I mean, this kid's electric. Stevenson's a smart. The thing with Robert Stevenson that I noticed more than anything, he's a really smart kid. And not even a kid anymore. I think he's 21, 22. But he's this really smart guy. I mean, this is a guy that's got a good head on his shoulders and has figured some stuff out, and also throws 98, which is a pretty good combination. Yeah. But the stuff and all those things, I remember John makes this point several times, and I think it's just a great point. I remember in 2008, you're looking around and like there's Cueto and Volquez. Volquez's stuff was better. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it comes down to who wants it. And John wrote a fantastic story in today's Cincinnati Inquirer, Sunday's Cincinnati Inquirer. It's all online. You can read it at Cincinnati.com. Please do. But just about how Johnny did. I mean, and talk about the development of Johnny.
Well, I think Cueto, I talked to Bronson Arroyo about him because he had been around for the whole development. He said, you need a certain amount of ability to become an ace, but you also have to be smart and you have to have feel. And Cueto does. He to watch the guy is amazing. He can – I always say this. I'll see him, you know, bases loaded or first and second and one out. He'll get up 0-2 on a guy, and he will not strike him out. He'll put a ball that the guy rolls over on and hits into a double play. He's uncanny with that stuff. And I think because Cueto doesn't speak English, he speaks English a little bit, but he doesn't do interviews in English and stuff. I think people underestimated his intelligence and his willingness to change himself, to get better. The guy throws six pitches, he can put them where they want. And that's the one thing I've learned watching baseball. I don't care how hard you throw it. If you can put it where you want, you can be successful. And that's what he does. I think Johnny Cueto is Bronson Arroyo with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. So he's that smart. He has that many pitches. But when he has to, he can throw it by. It's been really fun to watch that guy develop.
And they're both fearless.
Right. Yeah. Oh.
Right. Agreed. Agreed. Second question. Did you make it to Schwartz's?
I did make it to Schwartz's.
What'd you think?
It was great. I had the medium fat. It was fantastic. A pickle, fries.
I like Katz's better for the record, but
yeah,
it was pretty good. Half hour wait in line for that.
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah.
Table of one. Yeah. Rider's trip.
Yeah. Great trip, though. Montreal was excellent.
That was awesome. Thank you. Awesome, folks. Thank you so much.
Couple quick housekeeping notes. If by some sort of magic you are listening to this show tonight, opening day eve, I would like to let you know and everyone in the room know that tomorrow starting at 5 a.m., you can go to Cincinnati.com where they will be streaming live from Great American Ballpark. Paul Daner Jr.,
5 a.m.
Christine from Fox Sports Ohio, Matt Tabeek from The Enquirer, they're all going to be down there and they'll be providing updates throughout the day.
And you know who won't be?
Yeah,
this guy.
So check out Cincinnati.com tomorrow for all your opening day updates. Don't forget to follow at ENQ Sports on Twitter. That way you can find out when the next time we'll be having the live show here at Motor. Please subscribe if you have not already done so to the CDOT show. And
rate
follow.
And review.
What's that?
Rate and review.
Rate and review the show.
Yeah,
good.
Helps
good
somehow.
Reviews.
Good, right?
If
right.
You don't
if
have
you're
something
gonna,
nice to
you're
say,
you're gonna rip us. Yeah, don't bother. You can just
go leave
you
it
can,
on.
You can email that to me.
Beyond
personally.
The stripes.
I'll go cry.
Follow at C Trent at John Feyman. I am at Josh Schneed. Big thanks to Motor Pub as per
awesome.
Usual for hosting us.
Motor Burger.
Please support them. Please come out the next time we have a show here. On behalf of my co-host C Trent Rosecrans. Our guest, John Fay. I am Josh Sneed saying thanks for listening to the CDOT show. Go Reds! We'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys. That was awesome. I appreciate it, man.